Toastmasters, would-be Toastmasters, listeners and friends, you are most welcome to the Talk Show for Talkers here on irishtalkers.com. Now, you do know that we love to hear from you, so please send your comments and your suggestions to info@irishtalkers.com, by email, of course. You can find us on the web as irishtalkers.com, where you can listen to all our podcasts, our archive for the past 9 years. My name is Moira O'Brien, and today I am joined only by the perpetual Mr. Paul Amani. James is otherwise engaged today. Right, what do we have in store for you this week? Well, this is our magazine show, and we have a couple of interesting things for you in addition to the word of the week. Paul is going to be talking about club officers keeping going. And I'm going to be talking about voice production. Let's start off with Paul's contribution. Paul, how are you going to encourage club officers to keep going?
The good news today is that I've come across a stupendous article specially written to club officers. Yes, presidents and all the vice presidents and the treasurer and the sergeant at arms and the secretary, written specially to all 7 club officers in every single club in the world. And this is phenomenal. The subtitle of this article is How to Beat Burnout. How to Beat Burnout and Finish the Program Year Strong. So you can see that the author is on your side. Her name is Maureen Zappala. She's a distinguished Toastmaster, in my view, a very good writer. But wait for it. She's a former NASA propulsion engineer. A NASA propulsion engineer, imagine. She's also a professional speaker, author, and presentation skills coach. She founded a company called High Altitude. Well, she would, wouldn't she, if she was working for NASA? High Altitude Strategies, which is a coaching and speaking service. And Moira will put her website in the show note on our website. Okay, she's American. That doesn't mean that she's got the wrong sort of ideas. But let me tell you that she first of all uses, it's all about burnout, but it's also about brownout, a word I'd never heard before. Have you ever heard about brownout, Moira?
No, that's a new one on me.
Well, basically, if you suffer burnout, well, I mean, not to put too fine a word on it, you're finished. You're burnt out. You're going to give up your officer role, and you might be good to give up a lot of other things. But brownout is much more common. Apparently, there's a piece of research among executives, 1,000 executives, in which 40% of them suffer with brownout. Now, that's a feeling of being anxious, disengaged, and disillusioned in their job. So if you're anxious, disengaged, and are disillusioned in your role as a club officer, this article is definitely for you. Why would you be a brownout or a browned out person? She lists 5 reasons why. That you get no compensation. Well, Toastmasters doesn't give you any compensation. It does offer you some rewards. But if you're not getting those rewards, you're not getting compensation, are you? Time, if you love Toastmasters too much, you're going to spend too much time doing it. But even if you do the very basics, it takes time. And in some clubs, it could be a lot of time. Third reason is you don't get any recognition. Nobody publicly appreciates you. That'll cause a lot of motivation to dip, won't it? The culture of the club and the personality of the individual. So all of these things contribute to why somebody can experience brownout. By the way, she talks about the personality of the individual. Really, in essence, it adds up to not being able to say no. I would throw in as well the tendency to be perfect and want everything to be perfect. and perhaps even difficulty you might have with delegating to other people. And perhaps another difficulty might be your inability to trust that if you're missing and take a meeting off or two meetings off, the show might fall apart if you weren't there. So all of those things. So they're quite good, aren't they? No compensation, time, no recognition, the club culture and the personality of the individual. Now, she packages this whole article with the story about herself trying to complete a race, a 10-kilometer race. And the story is that she felt like giving up. Imagine a lot of marathon runners feel like giving up too when they hit the 20-mile mark. But yeah, so this is, when is this now? We're recording this in the month of April. And it could be that you, club officer, feel like giving up. You're worn down. You haven't got the energy to carry on. And you just want to quit. Now, Maureen says that by pushing through that impulse to quit, there are some benefits for you. She lists about 10 of them. She said personal pride. If you don't quit and you work through to the end of the year, you'll be proud of yourself. There's a question of integrity. After all, you've been elected as a club officer to serve for the whole year. And you might well feel a great satisfaction that at least you did what you promised to do. You'll be setting great example to other people by keeping going. You'll be able to hand over to next year's committee. You'll have a good transition. Some other ones are, you'll get the vice presidents for education and the president even, you'll get the privilege of voting at the district council, at the conference. You'll be able to celebrate success. You'll be able to develop your leadership skills. And by you sticking at it, you're going to be able to encourage other people to stick at it. But when I was thinking about this article, it's not a long one, I was thinking of how many club officers have I known over the years that have reached the point where they've said, I don't think our club should meet in June, or we've only got three more meetings in the year left, or oh my goodness, I'm getting fed up of going to committee meetings. I can tell you, I suffered burnout, well, brownout, really, earlier in this Toastmasters year. And I did indeed feel anxious, disengaged and disillusioned. And I did take a break. And that's one of the things that Maureen Zapata recommends, that in order to deal with this, take a break. And that may be that you hand over the job, for example, of putting together the agendas for club meetings. Hand that over to somebody else. They might actually love to do it. You could hold your club officer meeting in a restaurant over a meal, or go to somebody's house and, in my opinion, have a glass of wine during it. You could read the Toastmaster magazine. Remind yourself why you're in Toastmasters. And you could send handwritten notes to officers and to people who look like they're burning out. And remember, most of all, you're not alone. There are other people experiencing something very similar, and you can get in touch with them. I found it helps to go to other clubs and to build up kind of a bit of friendship with other people who are in the same boat. You could also have a social event with the members in the club, something really enjoyable. So long as you get somebody else to organize it, you certainly don't want to be organizing it while you're suffering this set of feelings called brown out. I don't know if brown out. Do you think, Moira, do you think brown out is a word to be found in the dictionary?
I don't know, Paul. We could try looking it up.
I think we should have made it the word of the show, but what I will say is that even if the word is entirely a makey up word and nobody uses it, I've never heard any, the cluster of feelings of being anxious and disengaged and fed up, and if you're going to face-to-face meetings, you know, the bigger attraction of watching a football match or Netflix. If a face-to-face meetings, you decide, oh, look, I've been on the computer all day, I don't feel like going to another meeting, even though your club only meets every 2 weeks and probably only for about an hour and a half. So but these are all symptoms, and I kind of defy anybody not to admit that they've experienced those symptoms. Maura, can I just do a little survey of one person? Have you ever felt, as a club officer, brownout?
Let's look at the definition of brownout first. And according to my dictionary here, it is a noun. It is the elimination of some or reduction of all electric lights of a city, especially as a precaution against attack in the time of war, or any curtailment of electric power as by a severe storm. So brownout doesn't actually, I'll rephrase that, brownout is not actually used for human beings. It is an electricity. But let us take up the challenge from Maureen Zapala and ask the question, where was I ever subject to brownout? Yes, I would say I was. And probably as area director, where I really didn't have much idea about what I was doing until the end of my term.
Yes. I laugh because that's something I recognize. It took me until about March to realize what I ought to be doing or how I ought to be doing it. But how long is it since you weren't on at least one club committee?
Lord. You know, I can't remember. I would say I think I first joined our club's committee in 2016, I think.
So I don't think you've ever been off the club committee since 2016.
No, I haven't. And before that, I think I was on, I can't remember, did I start Lee Valley Speakers in 2015? I think I did. So it might have been pretty well all my Toastmasters career.
Yeah, 8 or 9 years being a club leader. Now, it would be a miracle if you didn't experience some times. But there are, you know, you're a particularly committed person.
Well, I did recently resign as treasurer of another club, not our own club, but another one, basically because it got too much for me. The particular circumstances of that club, just it became a nightmare, and I had to resign. Otherwise, I was going to tear my hair out.
And you were, that resignation was in the middle of a year, was
it
not?
Yes, it was. It was.
Yeah. And that's the reason, I think. I think Maureen has written this article for one reason, but I think there's a second reason. I think she's written it because we have about 10 weeks of the current year to go. And if a club is going to finish strong and thereby start next year strong, it does need the galvanizing influence of club officers. Especially to finish strong means attracting new members even from now on. That will raise morale and helping people to achieve more education awards from now on, and certainly regarding this as one of the most revitalizing times of the year, because there's a district conference coming up. And of course, if you go to the district conference, there's a good chance that your morale might get a boost, because you'll find yourself in the company of a whole lot of other club officers. And you might even, a high probability you'll make some friends with them. But I want to thank Maureen for her excellent analysis. I found it very refreshing to read the subtitle in the article using the word burnout, which I was well familiar with. But also these words like running out of frustrated, weary, and alone. There it is. But halfway through the year, you're weary, frustrated, and alone. That you might be on a club committee and you literally can't get anyone to listen to you, or you can't persuade anybody that your point of view is worth adopting, and you think, I can't do this anymore. I feel like giving up.
You might be able to say then that your enthusiasm is fizzling out.
Oh, yes, Maura, absolutely. And you might want to say that you're actually fizzled. The other thing is, actually, you might be playing more than one club officer role. And if you find yourself being not only the vice president membership, but the vice president public relations, plus being the sergeant at arms, you know, what do you expect? And of course, some clubs are short of volunteers. Maybe the club culture is that hardly anybody volunteers to be a club officer.
I think we've probably done this full justice. Do you have a word of the week, perhaps?
Well, you've just used it, Mark. I don't know how you were inspired to use the word fizzle. But yes, F-I-Z-Z-L-E is a word that came about first about 200 years ago. And the word fizzle is usually used in the context of something fizzling out. And it is associated really with failure. So things have fizzled out. As a noun, you can say the play or the meeting was a fizzle. You can use that as a noun. Not very commonly used. But if indeed the play opened on Monday and closed on Tuesday, that would indeed be a fizzle. But fizzled out, it's a strong word. It came into the language in about 1840. As a verb, it's an intransitive verb. It's one which could well express something you have experienced. I think it's also got a bit of a pizzazz to it. In some cases, I think I almost had the impression that fizz, to have a bit of fizz about you, was a good thing. But when I looked it up in the dictionary, it doesn't have anything good, really, about it. Now, it was Maureen Zapala who used the word fizzle, and I thought, she put it in a sentence to using the word fizzle rather than fizzle out. And I thought, hey, I've learned something. Maybe others might like to learn something. What do you think, Moira, of the word fizzle?
Well, I like it a lot. It's a useful word. And it is one that is in my lexicon. But I'm looking at my dictionary definition. And whilst the definition is similar, to make a hissing or spluttering sound or to fail ignominiously, the origin, according to this, is 1525 to 35 from the earlier fizzle, F-Y-S-E-L, meaning to break wind. Frequentative of F-I-S-E, fizz, Old Norse, fizza, to break wind, akin to feist. So there we are.
Well, the year it came into the English language, according to the dictionary I'm looking at, the following words came into the English language. Breathtaking. Uh-huh. How's that?
That's a lovely word,
And also butterhead. I'm not sure what a butterhead is. But there's a short one called cabbie. That would be interesting to know what in 1840 was a cabbie. Now, I think I'll sign off at that point, Moira.
I think that's wise. So let's move on. And butterhead, by the way, does not feature in my dictionary. Let's move on to the last part of the show, where I'm going to be talking about vocal production, voice production. Now, this is something that isn't really covered in the Pathways Education, and nor was it covered really in the previous versions of the training programs in Toastmasters. So I thought it was going to be a worthwhile thing for us to pay a little bit of attention to. Now, I did do a speech on this in my club this week, which was an update to a speech that I first gave as part of my Competent Communicator Manual way back in 2016, I think it was, or 2015, I can't remember now, such a long time ago. But it's all about how we can use our voice. It has something to do with vocal variety, vocal variety is part of the issue, but it's more about how we can speak coherently in such a way that every single word that we speak is easily and readily understood by the audience. And that comes down to that simple word, diction. It's a lovely word, diction. If you try to speak it properly, diction, it has 1, 2, 3, 4 consonants. And consonants are the key to good diction. One of the things that has become prevalent in the English language in many parts of the world, and especially I think we find in London and probably in other places around the UK, is to drop the letter T in the middle of words. And a good example of that would be the word letter, which is often pronounced as a letter. Now, I've always considered this to be lazy speak, but that's not strictly speaking true. It's not lazy, it's the way that the young people these days are brought up to speak. Now, I don't know how or where this started, and it cannot be treated as bad English. It is just a way of speaking. However, it is not a good way of speaking if we want to be easily understood. So that's the first thing. To always, and there's a split infinitive, which is something I was taught as a young girl not to ever do. Again, I split another infinitive. But today, it's acceptable. We do it all the time. Where was I? Yes. So diction, pronouncing every letter in the word is key to being well and easily understood. Now, when we're talking on electronic means, Zoom or WhatsApp or whatever, it is less important that we learn how to project our voice. But when we're talking about face-to-face speaking, it becomes very much more important that we do project our voice. Now, I can remember one of our club members quite a few years ago now, who was very, very shy. If you can imagine, this speaker used to retreat to the back wall behind the podium and would speak in a very soft voice, which was actually quite difficult to hear at the back of the room. Now, this was partly because of that person's shyness, but this person did, after a couple of years in our club, did blossom to become a fairly good speaker. But in those days, it was giving the speech as far away from the audience as possible and in very quiet terms. The result was that those speeches didn't land very well at all. If that person had learned how to project the voice, then they could have gone to the back of the wall and yet still have been able to be heard. Now, it's not necessarily an easy thing to do. It's something which you have to practice and practice and practice. But the way you achieve this, and this is something that actors learn in actor school, how to project their voice, you have to create a chamber in your mouth and in your chest such that the sound that you're producing is propelled out of your mouth without you having to speak loudly. The way you do this is by opening up the back of the throat. Now, imagine that you have an egg behind your tongue. I know it's difficult to imagine, but if you think about it, that makes you open up your mouth, the back of your mouth, considerably. Another way of looking at it is what happens to your mouth when you yawn. When you yawn, the back of your mouth, or the whole mouth, is opened up. A third way, which I'm not quite so sure that this works so well, but if you imagine yourself smelling a rose. Now, a lot of that, if you think about it, when you smell a rose, when you smell anything, you tend to take a deep breath, and taking a deep breath does open up the mouth, on the back of the mouth. So this is the key thing, is to get the back of the mouth opened, and taking a deep breath opens up the chest as well. So now you have a resonance chamber from which the voice can be projected. Difficult to do, but if you practice it, you can do it. You may have gone to the theatre in the past, and as I used to do, I used to sit at the back of the upper circle, what we used to call the gods, because I couldn't afford the more expensive tickets. So I was about as far away from the stage as is humanly possible to be, and yet one could hear every sound that emanated from the actors. Now, some of that was due to the acoustics of the hall, obviously, but the rest of it was down to the way the actors projected their voices. You may think this is not so important for giving a speech, but imagine if you are in a hall without a microphone. I know that doesn't happen too often in modern times, but if you're in the back of the podium in a large hall, and it's a long hall, and there's people right at the back, you have to be able to project your voice to get to those people at the back. But you don't want to shout, because that will annoy the people who are in the front of the room. So projection is very important. Now, I'm conscious of the fact that we've gone on for quite a long time, so I'm going to call it now to a halt. But I hope that's been of some use to you. And if you'd like, you can invite me to come and speak to your club, and I can give my diction speech, which has been quite well received around the world. So thank you for listening. From myself, Moira O'Brien, and from Paul, we'll bid you a fond farewell and see you again next week, where hopefully we'll have another interview. Bye for now.